This is UU Todd Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you are in fact listening to Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind. This is me, Utah Phillips, here with Steve Baker, who once again is fiddling with the knobs. He's good at it. That was the wonderful music of the Borsdorfs. I never hesitate to mention their name because they're some of the finest folk musicians in North America. That little excerpt you heard at the beginning that sounded so anomalous with their music is With My Wild Irish Rose, a very, very early recording by the great John McCormick. That's one of those old 78s I have in my collection that has only one side to them, probably made around 1910 or so. We are here on radio station KVMR, the last bastion of pre-modern constructionism, here in Nevada City, California. California, where the lights are going off all over the state. Yes, they are. Power shortages, rolling blackouts, rolling brownouts, public power. We need public power. Yes, the humble light bulb is going to make socialists of us all. John McCormick, well now, this is not, I don't know exactly how this program is going to go. It's music that I dearly, dearly love, but that I've been sometimes reluctant to play because there are not very many people that like it. It's concert music. Music that when I'm alone, when I'm home from traveling, when I want my solitude, music that I listen to. Folks sometimes ask me, what do you listen to when you're at home? Do you listen to folk music? Do you listen to jazz? What? Well, no, I listen to concert music. Opera singers who took to the concert stage more than 50 to 100 years ago, and I've collected those records from junk stores and secondhand stores. This is a good place to start. I was over in Korea where I was a soldier, and it was a little town down there by a town called Bangma. I was in the market, blanket spread out on the ground with junk piled on it, and there was a little square box with rounded corners about a foot square, and I bought it. Because when you opened it up, the lid hinged up, there were three arms that swung out that would hold a record, hold a platter. And then there was a tone arm that you pulled out and plugged into the socket, and there was a crank and another little clip that you plugged into the side so you could crank it and then put the tone arm down on the record, and then the other half, the top, the lid, acted as the sound chamber, you know, the speaker. And it was the sort of thing that you'd carry into combat. It was called a Mickey phone. It was Japanese, left over from the Japanese occupation of Korea. And I bought that. But also there was a stack of records, old 78s, with Japanese labels, so I didn't know what was on them, you see. I took it back to the hooch, and much to the awe, shock, and chagrin of my hooch mates, I swung those arms out, put that platter down, unidentified, and wouldn't you know, this is exactly what I heard.
Delirio, non so se qualche lico è qualche faccio, è pure tua parte a te, ma sei tu farcelo. Tu sei pagliaccio.
Fella, I don't know exactly what happened to him. I think that he's a clown who has his heart broken. That was the 1902 recording of Enrico Caruso, and that's a true story. That's when I turned that on in our hooch with that Mickey phone. That's exactly what came out of it. I guess some Japanese soldier had been an opera buff. My old neighborhood in Cleveland, I guess that's the first place that I heard concert music. After dinner, when the weather was good, the Orville Street gutter rats would get out and run the alleys and catch fireflies in sort of an open field behind our house. The record players, the old Victrolas, the hand crank ones, when the electric machines were brought in before I was born, the old hand crank machines were hauled out onto the screened porches, and sometimes electric machines too, but the people, and this was a Yiddish-speaking Jewish neighborhood. This is where my stepfather moved us when I was 5 years old. And they would sit out on the screen porches with I remember one family with a big yellow bug light hanging from the ceiling that you could see for blocks and blocks. Would sit out there and play these old records. So they would echo through the night while we were out harvesting fireflies in a jar, so that hopefully we could have enough of them in there so we could read a funny book late at night under the covers when we were made to go to bed. Well, rediscovered one of those songs I first heard in my old neighborhood. It was said that Jan Pierce had the greatest voice of the 20th century. That judgment, however, was arrived at in the middle of the 20th century. I'm not sure what's happened since. A fine old 78 finally rediscovered Jan Pierce and the Bluebird of Happiness.
The beggar man and the mighty king are only different in name, for they are treated just the same by fate. Today a smile and tomorrow a tear, we're never sure what's in store. So learn your lesson before it is too late. Your head up high till you find the bluebird of happiness. You will find greater peace of mind
poet with his pen, the peasant with his plow. It makes no difference who you are. It's all the same somehow. The king upon a throne, the jester at his feet, the artist, the actress, the man on the street. It's a life of smiles and a life of fear. It's a life of hope and a life of fear. A blinding torrent of rain and a brilliant burst of sun. A biting, tearing pain and bubbling, sparkling fun. And no matter what you have, don't envy those you meet. It's all the same. It's in the game, the bitter and the sweet. And if things don't look so cheerful, just show a little fight. For every bit of darkness, there's a little bit of light. For every bit of hatred, there's a little bit of love. For every cloudy morning, there's a midnight moon above. Oh, don't you forget, you must search till you find the bluebird. You will find peace and contentment forever if you. Life is no abyss. Somewhere there's a bluebird. Of happiness.
Well, Jan Pierce, Bluebird of Happiness. Now, why is it that that music moves me so much? Why is it that these opera singers on the concert stage move me? I remember as a boy listening to Jan Pierce sing Yiddish folk songs in Yiddish with a full orchestra. I don't know. It's not nostalgia. I think it's authentically good music. Was it Abby Hoffman said nostalgia is another form of depression? And I don't feel depressed about this music at all. It's just music that I have a deep affection, a deep love for. I don't like to go back to Salt Lake City much anymore because the place has sort of been rebuilt from the ground up, and all of my old haunts are now fern bars and garden restaurants all along West Temple. Why, there used to be the Del Rio and the Havana Club, the old Porters and Waiters Club. It was run by the only black union in the United States. Porters and Waiters off of the railroad had their own club. Secondhand stores all down West Temple there. And I'd go in there and I furnished a whole house for almost nothing out of those secondhand stores. That's where I found my second hand crank Victrola. It was a stand-up cabinet model RCA. With a real good stylus, and it had it didn't have the volume control, it had the speed control, because Pathé Frères made a 78s that ran a little bit slower, and so I had a little armature down inside to control that, and it had an automatic cutoff. I loved that machine. I finally had to sell it because I ran out of money, but I collected a whole lot of records in those junk stores. As I was sorting through stacks and stacks of them, and oh yes, I found old recordings of the U.S. troops embarking for Europe during the First World War and then the celebration on their return, all of which I abandoned in Salt Lake when I abandoned Salt Lake. But sorting through those records, the most that I found, and virtually every other record, was John McCormick. John McCormick, when I left Utah and as I traveled, if I was visiting with older people, if I was staying with old people, they all knew the music of John McCormick. Many of them had grown up with it, had possessed the records, or their parents had possessed the records. John McCormick, well, he was trained in mathematics. He was mathematics and astronomy with sciences. That's what he was supposed to go to school for. He was born in Athlone, Ireland in 1884, but he wanted to pursue a musical career. So May 14th, I guess, 1903, he entered the Irish National Music Festival, and he won. And that meant that he could, in 1904, sail for America with the Dublin Choir to sing at the St. Louis Exposition. And that's what started him off on this global career that lasted up until around 1940. Now, look, I had to give up my hand crank machine. Somewhere out there, one of you has got a good hand crank Victrola. I hope it's an RCA. A Columbia will do. I don't necessarily need the cabinet down underneath, although it will be convenient. It's a lot easier to use. If you got one at a fair price, let me know, okay? Just get hold of me, and we'll see if I can afford it and get it shipped out here, because I'd love to hear. I've got 150 mint-condition John McCormick 78s going all the way back to 1909. I said that John McCormick entered the Irish National Music Festival and won. Well, the song that he won with is called The Snowy-Breasted Pearl. Let's listen to that now. John McCormick, The Snowy-Breasted Pearl.
Oh, she is not like the rose that proud in a beauty's lawn and boasted that she is so wondrous. She's like the violet blue, ever modest, ever true. From her leafy bower perfuming the still night air. Oh, she's gentle, loving, mild. She's artless as a child. Oh.
Thrush of Erin, the great John McCormick. I should mention that John McCormick had an operatic career and recorded a number of operatic pieces, but he gave up the opera stage because he deemed himself to be a poor actor, a bad actor. And in order to do opera, he had to be a reasonably good actor. So that's why he took to the concert stage. I had a mentor in New York City when I first started playing in the East. He lived in a little one-room garret over an Hispanic record store named Peter Wortsman. Peter Wortsman was a good writer and a scholar, considerably younger than I was, but still a mentor. He's the one who steered me toward the great Yiddish short story writers, Yitzhak Bashevis Singer, and so many others. Yitzhak Babel. I'd sleep on the floor in his apartment, but what he would play before he went to bed were these old records of Joseph Schmidt. And I fell in love with that again. It was a concert singer. Joseph Schmidt, during the late 1920s and 1930s, recorded a full catalog of operatic music, but only on the radio. He was the first great radio star. This was Deutsche Grammophon in Germany. And that's because he was less than 5 feet tall, so he couldn't appear on the stage. That meant that he had to confine himself to the concert stage and then to the radio opera. Joseph Schmidt had quite a long career. He was touring the United States, touring Mexico, and he came back to Germany and found out that his funds had been impounded. This is what the Nazis had long since taken over. His funds had been impounded, and he had lived in exile in Brussels. That's because he was the son of a Bavarian rabbi. He was Jewish. Well, of course, Brussels then fell to the Nazis, and he very dangerously smuggled himself across France to Switzerland, where he was put in a displaced persons camp, a Jewish displaced persons camp. It was there in about 1942 that he contracted pneumonia and passed away at the age of 38. He wrote letters to his old friend Gigli down in Italy, a great lyric tenor, appealing for help to get him out of his situation. But Gigli's patron was Benito Mussolini, the fascist dictator, and so Gigli never replied. I played the Goethe Festival in Switzerland some years ago, up there in Bern. I found out where Joseph Schmidt was buried, And I went down there and I put flowers on the grave as a thank you for the hours of great music he had given me from the concert stage. And this is where I made this poem for him. It's a letter, a supposed letter from Joseph Schmidt to Beniamino Gigli. Dear Beniamino, here in this camp, I am one of several thousand bystanders overwhelmed by our times. I am ill and can no longer sing. How can I ask you to save my life when you will not acknowledge my existence? My old friend, isn't the music enough? Why can we not simply become two old men sunning by the wall, silent, dreaming of how well we once filled the silence? Joseph Schmidt. Joseph Schmidt from one of his movies. He made a number of movies in Germany. He was a very fine-looking man. So, of course, in the movies, they used to stand him on a box, which, of course, wasn't filmed. The same way they did with Alan Ladd. I don't know if you knew that or not, but there's your trivia for the day. Joseph Schmidt moves me very deeply. A newfound treasure just lately, a Peter Dawson. Peter Dawson is a baritone. He was born in 1882 and Adelaide, Australia. He was down under, trained operatically, even though his father, who was a retired sea captain, had opened a hardware store selling plumbing equipment there in Adelaide. Well, he decided he was going to go into opera anyway. And he went to London. His uncle had a steamship line, so we caught a lift on a freighter, went to London, starved there. Couldn't get any money. Couldn't get any training doing what he was doing, and finally, he wrote and said he wanted to come back to Australia. He said he wanted some money in order to support him there in London. And his father wrote back and said, "Come back home and tend to your plumbing." Well, what happened was he got an offer for an audition from Edison Bell. That's when they were making cylinders. But he didn't have enough money. He had married by then a woman named Nan. Didn't have enough money for carfare to go to the audition. But his wife, who was playing in pantomime at a local theater, had used pennies to weight her dress to give it balance. So they cut open the seams and found the pennies and was able to send him over to Edison Bell for the audition. And that began another 50-year-long career as a baritone concert singer. He eschewed the operatic stage for financial reasons, said it's too much work for too little money, and he was doing really, really well on the concert stage. Well, at one time, there's so many stories about Dawson. One time he was practicing jujitsu backstage with one of the stage crew, and he threw his opponent onto the middle of the stage right during somebody else's performance, and he got himself fired. All his music was recorded acoustically. He was recording a song once called The Sinking of a Troop Ship, and the thunder machine collapsed on him because they hit it too hard, and that caused the whole light rack to collapse on him too. But he lived. He's quoted as saying why he went on the concert stage: "I am a man of the people, and what gifts I am fortunate enough to possess, I want to give back to the people." Well, let's listen to one of his old recordings, a song written by Rudyard Kipling, "Rolling Down to Rio," Peter Dawson.
I've never sailed the Amazon, I've never reached Brazil, but the Don and the Magdalena, they can go there where they will. Yes, weekly from Southampton, great steamers, white and gold, gold, rolling down to Rio, roll down to Rio, and I'd like to roll to Rio someday before I'm old, to roll. I'd like to roll to Rio someday before I'm old. I've never seen a jaguar, nor yet an armadillo, billowing in his armor, and I suppose I never will. I go to Rio, these wonders to behold. Go rolling down to Rio, go really down to Rio. Oh, I'd love to roll to Rio someday before I'm old. To roll, I'd love to roll to Rio day before I'm
old.
Welcome back. That was Blind Kenny Hall, of course, one of my favorite musicians down there in Fresno, California. I assume he's still in Fresno. I can't imagine Fresno without Kenny Hall. Paul Robeson, well, he was an opera singer, of course, among many other things. He left the opera stage, well, because there are so few roles for black opera singers. He was able to do Othello, and probably as well as it can possibly be done, but also because of racism. It was very, very difficult for a black musician who wasn't doing minstrel work, a black opera singer or concert singer, to be on the stage at all. Besides which, Paul Robeson had committed his entire life, his entire career, to the fight against racism, to the fight against classism, you see, to the point where he was blacklisted during the McCarthy times in the late 40s and early 50s, prevented from working. His passport was taken from him by the State Department because he had had the audacity to go and sing opera or sing concert work in the Soviet Union. In order to stay alive, Paul Robeson during the 1930s made a few movies, which are very rare movies, and none of them are particularly good. There was one of them called Saunders of the River, where Paul Robeson, these take place in Africa. And he's the African guide, Paul Robeson is, and he's told by the director that at the campfire, around the fire at night, he's to sing American Negro spirituals. Fairly alienating. Well, for better or worse, here's one of, I have an old 78 of Paul Robeson singing a song from Saunders of the River. Let's listen to the canoe song. Paul Robeson, Saunders of the River. Let's reach way back now. Henry Russell, operatically trained, became a concert singer. He was born in 1812 in England. When he was 8 years old, he sang with a children's opera in London, studied opera in Italy with Rossini. Living in abject poverty, which is what Dawson tried to avoid, immigrated to Canada, migrated to the United States, wound up as the organist at a cathedral in Rochester, New York, where he began to write what were called descriptive songs. That began a concert career which took him, in those days, the 1840s, to frontier towns like St. Louis, Missouri. And that concert career lasted him for the next 60 years. He finally died in 1901. These were the old concert halls. Well, we have one here in Nevada City, the Nevada Theater, the old Mark Twain Theater. Clifford Jackson, a fine opera singer and a baritone himself, set about to recreate a Henry Russell performance, which he then toured all over the country in those old concert halls, the ones that were still standing. Let's listen to Clifford Jackson recreate Henry Russell and a true piece of melodrama, The Ship on Fire.
As she followed the foam, for fond hearts within her were dreaming of home. The young mother pressed her fond babe to her breast and sang a sweet song as she rocked it to rest. And the husband sat cheerily down by her side and looked with delight on the face of his bride. Oh, happy, said he, when our roaming is o'er, we'll dwell in our cottage that stands by the shore. Already in fancy its roof I descry, and the smoke of its hearth curling up to the sky. Its garden so green and its vine-covered wall, the kind friends are waiting to welcome us all. And the children that sport by the old oaken tree are gently the ship glided over the sea.
rose in the air, and the mother knelt down, and the half-spoken prayer that she offered to God in her anyone was, Father, have mercy, look down on my child. She flew to her husband, she clung to his side. Oh, there was a refuge, what air might betide. The cheeks of the sailors grew pale at the sight, and their eyes glistened wild in the glare of the night. It was vain o'er the ravage, the waters to drip. The pitiless flame was the lord of the ship, and the smoke in thick wreaths mounted higher and higher. Oh God, it is fearful to perish by fire, alone with destruction, alone on the sea. Great Father of mercy, our hope is in thee. Sad at heart and resigned, yet undaunted and brave, they lowered the boat on a speck on the wave. First entered the mother, enfolding her child. It knew, she caressed it, looked upward and smiled. Cold, cold was the night as they drifted away, and mistily dawned o'er the pathway the day. And they prayed for the light, and at noontide about, the sun o'er the waters shone joyously out. Oh, sail! Oh, sail! Cried the man on the lee. Oh, sail! And they turned their glad eyes o'er the sea. They see us, they see us, the signal is waved. They bear down upon us, they bear down upon us, they bear down upon us, the signal is waved. Thank God, we're saved.
Thank God we're saved. Is that not a piece of work? I wish you could hear that whole record. Maybe I'll play some more of him later on in this while I'm doing these shows. These old opera houses and music halls were very, very important, especially to our immigrant population. You know, so much opera, so much great music would have perished, would have not found an audience in this country, but for the poor that filled the stalls, that filled the cheap seats in mining towns all over the West and factory towns all over the East and the Midwest. Take you to Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, let's say. A coal miner, Irish immigrant coal miner working underground, goes to Philadelphia to greet his new bride who's come across from Erin on a sailing boat, and is going to take her back to be his bride in this grimy dungeon of a town, working underground with his clothes freezing to his body and the air filled with coal smoke, and maybe enough money to go to a concert hall, a little clapboard opera house, to listen to some fine music to elevate the spirit. Can you imagine the effect on those people, that young couple in a concert hall, listening to this?
I'll take you home again, Kathleen, across the ocean wild and wide, to where your heart has cheek. I've watched them fade away and die. Your voice is sad whene'er you speak, and tears bedim
wondering eyes. Oh, I will take you back, Kathleen, to where your heart shall feel no pain. And when the fields are fresh and green, I'll take you to your home again.
Robert White, a great new contemporary concert singer and a student of John McCormick. I've seen Little Opera. I love it. I think back, oh, to the earliest thoughts I'm able to possess, back to arch antiquity, when we began to try to shape the nature, the natural world around us through ritual. How, when somebody died, the only change you saw was that they stopped breathing, so breath was terribly important. So the sounds, the first singing was very broad and very loud. We built altars and decorated them elaborately with things at hand. We wore animal skins for costumes. We danced. We beat on logs and beat things together for music. A whole liturgy of all of these elements. I maintain that opera is the secular form of our earliest liturgy, because that's the only form where all of those things still take place. And that's one of the reasons probably why it fastens itself to my spirit. I wish I had an opportunity to listen to it more. Well, we're going to have to suspend this for right now. Thank you very, very much for letting me play you some of my favorite music, and we'll see you next week. Yes, this has been your friend, UU Todd Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you've been listening to Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind.
Fire is burning while your hearts are young.